Welcome to this Monday edition of Main Street here on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein. We are glad that you are with us. And as we anticipate the holidays, Main Street will be with you on Monday and Tuesday this week. And then we will be back the following Monday after Christmas. As we wind 2025 down, we have a special Main Street in store for you today. And we begin Main Street today with a conversation about adoption. When people hear the word adoption, they often picture just one story, but the reality is far more complex, personal, and wide-ranging. Adoption can involve infants, older children, special needs kids, open relationships, and deeply emotional decisions made by birth parents, adoptive families, and adoptees themselves, decisions that don't begin or end with just paperwork. Today, we're joined by Chris Haycraft. She's the Director of Pregnancy, Parenting, and Adoption Services at Catholic Charities of North Dakota. Chris, welcome to Main Street.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure that you are with us. We're also joined by Maria Huizengay, and she's the lead AASK Ask Adoption Specialist for Catholic Charities in North Dakota. ASK stands for Adults Adopting Special Kids. Maria, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Let's begin with looking at kind of the big picture scenario. When people hear the word of adoption, from your perspective, it's really so much more broader than maybe we think about it. How broad is adoption work in North Dakota today? And Chris, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I think that there isn't really a typical adoption. Every situation is extremely unique. And at Catholic Charities, we are able to help with all kinds of adoptions. So everything from kiddos in foster care, which is Maria's kind of expertise, to domestic infants and identified adoptions and even international adoptions.
Maria, when we see stories maybe in media about kiddos in foster care, it's maybe a family that has taken a child into their home. It's worked out so very well and they want to adopt. Is that generally where you come into play?
Yeah, and so a lot of the adoptions we facilitate are with foster parents that currently have a foster child in their home who they are identified to adopt. But we also work with children in foster care who do not have an identified adoptive option. And so we utilize recruitment efforts to locate the best possible family for that child. And then we work with families that come to our program wanting to adopt that are not foster care licensed, so they don't have an identified child. And so our goal is to match those families with those waiting children.
We're going to get into all things adoption. And before we get into details, walk us through the role of Catholic Charities North Dakota that it plays in adoption. What typically comes to you, and at what point then in the journey does it all begin?
So I can kind of start on the pregnancy, parenting, and adoption services side, and we just shorten that up with PPAS because it's a mouthful. So Catholic Charities is a licensed child placing agency, which allows us to work with all aspects of adoption services. And so we are able to do the home studies for families, prospective families hoping to adopt. We're able to work with expectant parents who are exploring that option of making an adoption plan. And then we provide all of the post-placement and post-adoption services kind of for the rest of their life to make sure that they're supported throughout that entire journey.
I want to learn more about what those supports look like for the rest of their life, because again, that's surprising to me. It seems like we're presented with this painting, I guess, of kids who are adopted, and then that's it. The life kind of goes on there.
Yeah, we work really hard, and Marie will talk more about our North Dakota Post-Adopt Network, but we work really hard that, that adoption finalization is actually just the start of kind of those services and supports.
And Maria, typically, who comes to you, and at what point in a journey of folks who are interested in adopting enter, I guess, your area or your desk?
Yeah, absolutely. And so ASK has a contract with the state of North Dakota Department of Health and Human Services. And so we have a contract with the state to facilitate all foster care adoptions. And so whenever there is a foster or a child within the foster care system who is not able to be returned to their caregivers, because that is always going to be the primary goal, is reunification. And if that is not able to happen, the custodian of the child, typically like a human service zone or a tribe, submits a referral to our program, and we get involved right away, and we're walking alongside that child and in their case goal and case plan all the way from the start and through finalization.
And again, as you said earlier, it may or may not be with the family that that child was initially placed with.
Yes, I'm absolutely.
How do you learn of families who are interested in adopting a foster child?
Yeah, so if it is not a current foster parent who is wanting to adopt the child in their home, families hear about us all over. We really try to emphasize spreading awareness for our program, the need for adoptive families in all sorts of ways and areas throughout the entire state of North Dakota. And so oftentimes we get phone calls from families just saying, we've kind of been thinking of this for a while, and what's the next step? And so we get them started with an inquiry meeting, which is just information to learn more.
And I should emphasize, one does not need to be a member of the Catholic Church to utilize your services, correct?
No, they do
not. That is absolutely correct, yeah.
Chris, why do you think adoption remains such an emotionally charged topic, even for people who aren't even involved in it?
You know, I think adoption is an emotional journey, right? It's deeply personal. It's a unique decision and unique situation for everybody involved. We call it the adoption triad. So for the adult adoptee or adoptee throughout their life, the expectant parent and birth parent, and the adoptive family, it's a journey for each one of those. And I think if you take that coupled with some, you know, like sensationalizing maybe through the media, I think it kind of takes maybe one story and makes it big, and people forget that that's just one story, and that each story is unique. And I think it can kind of lead to some misconceptions about adoption as well.
Let me talk about one of those misconceptions. I read a very interesting story over the weekend. One of the takeaways for me was adoption is a deliberate act of love, and it is not a consolation prize. Is that a myth you'd like to talk about?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, adoption is the ultimate act of love on everybody's part, right? On an adoptive parents of saying, hey, I want to love this child, even though they weren't born to me, to an expectant parent who's saying, you know, I want everything for this child. And right now, for whatever reason it might be, I can't give that to them. And making that self-sacrifice to say, I want to give you everything, and this is how I can do it.
Maria, you had told me that you work primarily with in-state adoptions, but Chris, that's not the case with adoptions that you support. Tell me about those, whether they're domestic or out-of-state or even international, and how those paths differ.
Yeah, so we work with families hoping to adopt. The family is always here in North Dakota, and we're kind of the North Dakota expert, right? So we'll do their home study and get them prepared and educated for adoption. And then there's kind of several paths that they can take. One would be to adopt a child here in North Dakota. And typically a licensed child placing agency would also be working with that birth parent. So typically it's Catholic Charities working with the birth family, expectant family, and the adoptive family. And kind of everything happens right here in North Dakota. But they can also be connected with a birth parent situation from another state. And then we would work with another agency that is that primary placing agency that helps with the paperwork and the things in that other state, or even internationally. We have families that do all of the North Dakota preparation here, their home study is done here. And then they use a primary placing agency that has expertise in that other country and matches with the child there, flies off, and meets the qualifications of that country. Sometimes it's staying there for a week, sometimes it's staying there for a month, kind of whatever the qualifications are. And then once they come home, all three of those situations, Catholic Charities does all of the follow-up and helps support them then moving forward.
It's the case that there are more kids needing, so to speak, to be adopted or wanting to be adopted, and fewer folks wanting to adopt, or is it the inverse of that?
I can talk about pregnancy, parenting, and adoption services, and this might not be the same answer as Maria has in the ASK program. We have definitely seen a decline in expectant parents who are choosing to make an adoption plan. So we absolutely have more hopeful families and prospective adoptive families than we have infants who need a home. And we always say, you know, we're not out there looking for babies for families. We are out here preparing families to be amazing homes when a baby is needing them. And so we're just wanting to work with expectant parents and make sure that they're making really good choices and are prepared for baby. And when that choice is adoption, we want to make sure that we have amazing homes who are able to step in. And so we do have more families than we would have infants who need a home.
Maria, is it the same in your program?
Yeah, so on any given month, there's approximately 20 to 30 children within the ASK program that are waiting for their identified adoptive family. And so we are always looking to increase the number of waiting families we have, but more specifically, we are looking for the families that are wanting to adopt the older children, because we are recruiting primarily for children that are ages 10 to 17 years old. And so there are a lot of families that reach out to us wanting to adopt and look more into the process, but are interested in adopting some of those younger children like toddlers. And that just isn't the demographic of children that we're recruiting for right now. And so we are definitely always trying to spread awareness and open the doors up for families that are interested in adopting older children.
Joining my conversation with Chris Haycraft, she's the Director of Pregnancy, Parenting, and Adoptive Services for Catholic Charities in North Dakota, and Maria Huizenge, she's the lead ASK Adoption Specialist. ASK stands for Adults Adopting Special Kids. To both of you, for prospective adoptive parents listening right now, what is the biggest surprise when they begin the process? Chris, you first.
I think one of the biggest surprises is that openness. I think a lot of parents come to us with a fear of openness and not sure what to expect. And openness is just that communication they have with the birth family following the adoption and throughout the child's life. And I think, you know, because of the uncertainty and because of the unknown, and maybe because of some of the things that they've heard in the media or things like that, there is a fear. And it's really fun to watch families kind of, you know, have some education and a lot of conversations and really grow to see the beauty in openness and really grow to really wrap their hearts around not only this child, but around their family that made this amazing choice, you know, to have them raise their child. So I think that openness is something that I think people don't necessarily expect. And it's just kind of been an amazing journey. And to be able to sit back and watch families on that journey has been really fun.
Maria?
Yeah. You know, I facilitated a panel with four adoptive parents, and we asked a similar question to this, and all four of them said a very similar response. And what surprised them the most throughout this process was how much they grew as people and how much they learned about themselves, that they had more grace and patience than they ever thought was conceivable at the time before starting this, and how resilient they can be and how adaptive to new situations, and just the love that they had that they didn't think was possible. So it's really interesting to see that what surprised them the most was themselves and how they reacted and responded to the adoption process.
Maria, I want to stay with you. What does special needs mean? And I use that in air quotes, in real life. Certainly not just a label, right? But day to day, what does that mean?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I've said this many times, but the children we serve are all within the foster care system. And so that means on some level, regardless of the age they came into foster care, they have experienced some sort of loss and trauma. And that being said, these children have some needs that may take special services to make them successful in their own way, whether that be mental health services, occupational therapy, family counseling, school services, really just any services that could be put in place to make them successful and help them heal and process from their past experiences.
To both of you, Chris, I'll start with you first. How do families assess whether they're ready, not just legally, but emotionally and practically, maybe fiscally, for the kind of adoption that they're considering? What are the steps?
Well, and I love that question, because I think a lot of times people think, well, you got to have a home study and it's just check the box, right? We have,
I remember a Friends episode, by the way, when the gal from the adoption agency comes over and she looks around and you guys are going to be great. And off she goes. And that's about it. That's about all we see with that process. It's so much more, though, I'm sure.
It absolutely is. And it's not just about the boxes, right? Yep, I want to make sure that you can pay your bills and you're financially stable in order to bring a child into your home. But it's really about that education and about, you know, preparing your hearts and your home to parent an adopted child. And I think historically, we did a real disservice because we just said, you know, take this child in, don't talk about adoption, and make sure you love them just the same as every other child and as they were born to you. And I think we did a disservice to that child because that's a unique and very special part of their experience in their life. And so, you know, even teaching families about loving their child for their adoption story and embracing their culture that might be different from yours, and embracing their story and being open to questions. You know, I think, you know, I being a non-adopted person can look at my mom and say, oh my goodness, like we look exactly the same and we have the same goofy smile. And that's not something that every adoptee can do. And so, you know, acknowledging that, and if you have a spirit of openness in your adoption, being able to say, you know, even if you don't have continued communication, I met your mom at the hospital. Her smile was gorgeous, and you have that exact same smile. You know, being able to have that connection for that child is kind of amazing. And I think we do a much better job now in supporting the child as an adoptee, and that's a beautiful piece that we want to celebrate.
Maria, is the process the same for you and your program?
I would say it's relatively similar in terms of having to do a home study and things. The things we look for and we talk about during a home study probably vary because of the children we serve and the situations and circumstances involved. But I mean, kind of to echo Chris, the home study is more than, you know, checking boxes. We're really having a lot of conversations about different scenarios and competencies and how are you going to respond in these situations and the different needs that the children are going to come with. What services are we going to get in place? How are we going to manage these situations? And really educating them, like Chris said, and offering trainings, offering supports when and where available to make sure they are set up for success.
Is it easier for someone to adopt in, I'm using air quotes again, and I apologize, urban North Dakota relative to rural North Dakota for folks that are far away from services and the things that you just talked about, Maria?
I would say one isn't easier than the other, as long as we can just assess and ensure that the family is able to have transportation and get the child to the services, the closest available as often as they need. Now that telehealth and things like that are way more common, it makes it a little bit easier, definitely. But I wouldn't say one is easier than the other. Our families are spread all throughout North Dakota, even the ruralest of places. So we make it work.
Each of you have talked about a home study a couple times. Can you give us a little more insight into what that is? And if I'm considering my home today, what should I be thinking about relative to my physical thing that is a house, but it's also our home?
Yeah, I can start. So really, when we do a home tour, we have to tour the home. We're really looking for a narrative of a home, a layout of the home. Is it safe? Does the child have their own space? Do they have privacy? Things that they are going to bring into your home that is theirs and they are going to want to keep private and personal. Is there enough space in the home overall? Are there toys or age-appropriate things for the child to do? And then safety things too. We want to make sure there's no, you know, haphazard or sanitary issues. We want to make sure that the environment is safe. If they do live in rural areas, just making sure the perimeter is safe and things like that.
Chris, anything to add?
Yeah, I mean, I think the home study is pretty all-encompassing. And I don't say that lightly. I think families share their heart and soul with us through the process. And it really is everything from, you know, your pet records and making sure your pets are vaccinated all the way to talking about your marriage and how do you handle conflict within your marriage. And so it's all things, right? We're really talking about all the things that play into being the very best parent that you can be.
We've talked a little bit about trends. Let's talk about some more that you're seeing right now. I think you mentioned, Chris, maybe a few fewer infants that are available today for adoption. What are other trends that are out there that North Dakotans need to know about?
I guess, you know, sorry, Chris, for me, I kind of already alluded to this, but the age of children that we serve right now, it is increasing. I mean, it's always been between 7 and 15 has always kind of been the primary age that of the children we're recruiting for. But lately, it does feel like that number is increasing to maybe that more like 10 to 17 year old age range.
Any other trends, Chris, that you've noted?
You know, I think, I don't know, it's my own soapbox probably, but there's a trend nationally that has maybe started to make adoption a bit like a business. Mm-hmm. And not, you know, we're seeing agencies from around the country who are charging astronomical amounts of money to families hoping to adopt. maybe preying on their vulnerability and then not providing good services to the moms that they're working with. You know, and I think we are very, very blessed in North Dakota that we have laws in place that protect our birth parents and make sure that they do meet with counselors and that they are provided the support needed. But that isn't what happens around the country. Sometimes moms can be kind of taken advantage of. And I think, you know, making it a business is not the direction that adoption needs to go.
We certainly have a lot of conversations and focus on adoptive parents. But what do you want more of us to understand more of the experience of birth parents?
You know, I think making an adoption plan for a child is the most selfless act of love a person can make. You know, I think that society, when you asked about trends, you know, society has kind of changed to, if you're making an adoption plan for a child, you're seen as selfish almost. You know, you're not wanting to raise this child, and you're just wanting to go have fun, or you're only worried about you. And it really makes me sad. And I use kind of the boat analogy, and I don't know where it came from, but if you are in a boat and it's you and your newborn infant, and that boat is sinking or something is happening to the boat, the first thing that every single one of us is going to do is we're going to hand that baby to somebody else standing there to say, please, please take them. So I'll try to row or whatever, but it is not selfish to say, keep that baby and try to row with one arm. You know, none of us would ever say that. But for some reason, adoption, which is that very same thing, like, I can't do it right now. I can't be whatever this child needs. But for some reason, society tells those parents that they're less than, or that they're not good enough, or that they're selfish. And that is like the ultimate act of self-sacrificing love, to say, I want what's best for this baby. And no matter what I want, I'm going to give it to them.
Maria, is it a little different for you with older parents, perhaps?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little different in the context of it being foster care as opposed to voluntarily making an adoption plan. There are absolutely biological parents that do voluntarily still terminate their rights when their child is in foster care, and there's parents that don't voluntarily terminate. It just gets to a point where they are not able to do what is necessary to safely get that child back into their home.
Okay. How early, Chris, do you hear from a prospective set of parents, or maybe just a single mother even? How early along in the pregnancy process do folks usually come to you?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that there isn't typical. I think sometimes folks, you know, find out they're pregnant very early in their pregnancy and call right away and say, oh goodness, I'm not really sure what the scoop is. I'm not prepared to be a parent yet. Let's start from the very beginning. All the way up to sometimes people call us after delivery, and maybe they've been putting it off and they just haven't. It's a really hard phone call to make. And so now they've delivered a baby and they need a plan within the 24 hours of what they're going to do with baby. And we even have parents who call us and they've taken baby home from the hospital and they've parented for a few months, and maybe they've decided, you know what, that's not the best choice. So somebody can call us at absolutely any point. And I don't know that there is the typical.
Chris, I want to be very delicate with this question, but there are, I am sure, parents that come to you or moms that come to you that are weighing multiple options for their future, and adoption is one of those options. How do you handle that?
Yeah, I mean, I think at Catholic Charities, we are experts in parenting, we're experts in adoption. And so those are going to be the places that we can talk through the expertise, you know, our area of expertise. If somebody is looking at other areas, then we're going to really encourage them to make sure that they're finding out the details that they need to make sure that they're making really informed decisions, because that's what we want. We want to empower moms and families. And I say moms because it's usually moms, but we, as much as we can have those dads involved or extended family, we just want them to have all of the education to make the decision that's best for them.
We're going to pause here for a bit for the news, and then we're going to come back with our guests. We have several more questions about adoption here in North Dakota. Stay with us. We're continuing our conversation today on Main Street about adoption, and we're joined by Chris Haycraft. She's the Director of Pregnancy, Parenting, and Adoption Services at Catholic Charities North Dakota. We're also visiting with Maria Huizenga, and she's the lead ASK Adoption Specialist. ASK stands for Adults Adopting Special Kids. I want to talk more about the support that you give birth parents. Is it generally your hope that a relationship is maintained with the adopted child through their lives? Or is it, does it, I don't want to use the word work out better, that simplifies things way too much if there's no connection. Give us more insight there.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're always going to take our lead from the unique situation. I think research shows that openness and that connection has a lot of benefits. But I also know not everybody is in a spot in their life where it can be healthy communication or healthy openness. And so we kind of look at two things. One, we look at actual openness, and then we look at the spirit of openness. And so we really work with both the expectant parent, birth parent, and the adoptive family to have a level of openness that works for them. And so sometimes a birth parent comes in and they say, you know what, it would just be too hard for me to have regular contact with them. That just would feel overwhelming to me, and I would feel like saying goodbye over and over again. And so sometimes they would rather just do pictures and letters, right?
Let me ask you this question quickly, Chris, and I apologize for interrupting. Is it the case where 8 years later, the parent knocks on your door and says, now I'm ready to have a relationship with my little son or my little daughter who I gave up for adoption?
Yep. I mean, that absolutely could happen, right? And that's why we like that spirit of openness, so that the family has always been talking about it. So even if for 8 years, this child has not had an actual connection with their birth parents, their adoptive family has still been talking about them. They've still been praying for them at bedtime. They've still been using the word birth parents. So that child kind of knows. And then if that's the case, if that mom or dad or whoever comes back and says, hey, I'm at a really good spot, I would like some openness, then that's where Catholic Charities reaches out and says, hey, family, how are you feeling about that? How does that fit into your world? And how can we be helpful in that process?
You know, and of course, media has told us that then all of a sudden that can become a disruptive process.
Yeah, and that's
not real life.
Nope, that's just not real life. You know, we're there to navigate that. And adoptions are a legal process and they are final. So if you're kind of alluding to like somebody could come back and say, hey, I want a parent now, that's not something that can happen. And we do a really good job of working with everybody in the adoption triad to really talk about that adoption isn't co-parenting either. So even if you have lots of openness, it's not co-parenting. You are still choosing this family to parent your child. And you get to take on, in openness, a really cool role, you know, almost like a fun auntie or something like that. But you're not mom and you're not dad. That's what you're choosing them to do. And I think we have a lot of really great conversations that set that up for success to make sure that everybody's on the same page.
Bria, is it any different for a young teen who was adopted?
Yeah, I mean, it's not often that I get that direct involvement with birth parents, but for young teenagers who are going through our process and for the adoptive families, we really emphasize the importance of familial connection and keeping them connected when appropriate and safe with any birth family contact, whether that's birth parents, siblings is very huge, as long as, especially if they're not adopted by the same family. And then, you know, extended family and relative as well. It's all very important. And we also emphasize and educate on the importance of never talking negatively about birth family. It is so important. I mean, that is that child's where they came from. That is, they're forever going to be bonded and connected to those first caregivers and those biological parents. And so it's important to honor that story and to shine a light on the positives as much as possible.
Is there expenses involved for a family who wants to adopt, other than, of course, the additional cost perhaps of having a child in their home?
Yeah, I can start. And so for the Ask Adoption program, when adopting through us, it's actually very minimal cost. There are some upfront costs, but those are typically reimbursed and supported by the Department of Health and Human Services. They actually help families pay for those upfront costs. And then along with that, they also continue financial monetary supplements until the child turns 18. So they do help financially throughout the child's remainder of their childhood.
Chris?
Yeah, so our program is a little bit different, and we do have some fees that go with our adoption. The family, you know, pays an application fee and then a home study fee. And the very cool thing about that is that North Dakota is able to pay or reimburse successful home studies, which is phenomenal. And then there are some additional fees of when they receive placement and baby comes into their home, and we're providing post-placement But those fees kind of vary on what agency they're working with. So if they're just working with Catholic Charities, those fees are pretty minimal because we keep them subsidized by donations. But when we're looking at an out-of-state agency, you know, to match with or an intercountry agency, sometimes those fees can get pretty significant.
Yeah, the international adoptions that I've become aware of just with friends who have went through the process, it's a very expensive process. Of course, I have no idea which route they chose to go to adopt their child, but even to the extent of GoFundMe support and those types of things kind of getting out there.
Yes, absolutely.
So you've talked about adoption not ending essentially when the papers are signed. So how do you support families and individuals after placement? And families is maybe the parents and maybe also the young person. What supports are there?
Yeah, so after an adoption is finalized, North Dakota has what's called the North Dakota Post-Adopt Network. And so they actually serve all adoptive and guardianship families within the state of North Dakota. And it's a completely voluntary program, but families who adopt are automatically a part of it. They're automatically going to be connected to this network. They're there to serve as a resource for support and services. They offer different like parenting groups, they offer education webinars, different educational things, they offer children's events, they offer mom's retreats, dad's retreats. Two times a year they have like a summer camp and a winter retreat for adoptive families in the state. They offer referral services to different therapies or different services the child may need. And they oftentimes are just a listening ear. After adoption finalizes, sometimes adoptive families have questions or they're overwhelmed or new things come up with children and they don't necessarily know how to navigate those situations. And so our post-adopt coordinators are there to help the family however they can.
Chris, is it the same for a family who adopted maybe an infant?
Yeah, so we always do an official referral to the North Dakota Post-Adopt Network, but we joke that as soon as you start working with us, like your family and your family forever. So, you know, we have families that we help with communication and that openness for the child's 18 years. And we have situations that come up where all of a sudden this kiddo is in fifth grade and they have to do their family tree project, right? And so what does that look like? And you know, just giving us a call to kind of walk through that. Or my son is in kindergarten and mentioned that they were adopted and the class wants you to come in and talk about what it means to be adopted. So we just kind of stay with the family, and that includes that birth family too, of updates, and keep us involved in letting us be your cheerleader.
I'm sure that there are emotional questions that come up years later for both adoptive parents, for birth parents, for adoptees themselves. What have you seen? Chris, let me start with you.
Yeah, I mean, I think developmentally, when you kind of meet those milestones, new questions arise, new answers are needed. And so walking with families and birth parents, kiddos, all of them throughout their life to kind of address things in a developmentally appropriate way throughout their life. You know, and we also have adoption search and disclosure where folks who didn't have openness can come back and reach out to each other through our agency. And we see a lot of times when folks get to that age of I'm going to, you know, start parenting and I just recently got married, and they'll start really thinking about their birth family and what that means and what that connection is like and maybe reach out. So
there's probably some times medical questions may also kind of promulgate a need for that.
Yep, absolutely. Yep. And we can definitely reach out and get updated medical information.
Maria, what about you? I'm talking about emotional or identity questions that come up even years after a young teen, maybe perhaps, or a young older child was adopted.
Absolutely. I think like Chris mentioned, as children meet different developmental milestones, the questions may vary depending on their age. But a very common one as children get older is just they maybe have some anger about, though they may love their adoptive family and are so appreciative and they are glad they are where they are, there may be just some questions and anger about why didn't mom and dad try harder for me? Why didn't they work harder? And at that point, it's so important to validate how that child's feeling and try to understand their emotions and let them know that's okay. But like Chris said a while ago, every person has a story, and just trying to kind of partner with that child to help them understand that it wasn't their fault and kind of navigate that story a little bit, and then access mental health counseling to give that child a safe place to process their feelings and their grief, because that's ultimately what it is. It's grief and loss just manifesting in various ways as the child grows older.
we were talking about trends earlier. I think I heard you say the trend is to have more open adoption relationships than perhaps happened years and years ago. Chris, is that right?
Absolutely. Yep. I think the trend is always leaning towards openness, and it's a continuum. So openness might just be that you get a card and letter sent to your birth parent once a year, or it might be that they are coming to your birthday celebrations and to your school programs. So there's a wide array of what openness can look like. But I definitely think some level of openness is pretty popular in most adoptions.
Without naming names, can each of you maybe share with us a story that really captures the complexity of what we've talked about today, the adoption journey, one maybe that didn't follow that straight line? Chris, maybe you first.
Yeah, I'm not really certain that there is an adoption that is typical or follows the straight line. I think that there are twists and turns and ups and downs that come with every adoption journey. I think, every situation is so unique. I think it's been really fun to watch. I've had families who've reached out wanting to adopt a newborn and an infant. And through our, we educate them and do the home study process with them. And sure enough, it kind of opens their heart and it opens their mind. And somebody who knows them reaches out and says, actually, so-and-so has three kiddos and they're not able to parent. Would you be an option for them? And I think before they learned about adoption and openness and all the things, I don't know that they could have been in a place to say yes, but ended up with, a sibling group of three as a family to say yes. And they came to us hoping for a North Dakota infant baby, and they came out exactly where they were supposed to be with a ready-made family of three kiddos. So I just think it's fun to sit back and to watch that where people end up, because it's not always where they started.
Maria, how about you? Any stories that really have followed a really beautiful journey?
I would argue that all of our stories are beautiful, the beauty of adoption is the day that an adoption finalization occurs in court, it's not the end of a story. It's not the end of a journey. It is the beginning of something that can be so, so beautiful. And so I think for the younger children on their adoption day, for a lot of the children, the families is just all they've known. They've been in the foster home for a while and it's their, that's what they're comfortable with and what they know. And we get to just prepare them for the rest of their childhood living in that home. And for the older children, you see so much strength and resiliency in these children who have lived through a lot of experiences and have got to play a role in their adoption journey as much as appropriate and much as possible. And then they get to stand there in court on their adoption day, vocalizing that this is what they want for their lives. And that could be probably one of the hardest things they're ever going to have to do. But there's so much strength and courage in a courtroom on those days.
How old is too old to consider being an adoptive parent?
For us, it doesn't have anything to do with age. It has everything to do with their ability to mentally, emotionally, physically care for a child, especially a child who has many, many years left in their childhood before they're 18. It has to do with financial, if they still have the financial means to care for a child, and just, like I said, the physical and emotional strength and abilities to do so. We recently finalized an adoption with a 7-year-old woman who adopted two little children. And so there is older people, older than what you might think, who is adopting out there. And that mother who adopted those children there is no question about her ability to care for those boys for the rest of their lives. It was a beautiful adoption.
Chris, anything to add there?
No, I think that was a brilliant, brilliant answer. I guess the only thing is that when you're looking at international, some countries have specific regulations about who can adopt. And that's not only age. I mean, some countries have a body mass index that you have to be under. It's just each country is very unique.
Sure.
But no age limit or expectation other than to care for those kiddos.
Can a single father or a single mother adopt?
Yes, they can.
Absolutely.
There's someone today who's quietly listening to this and considering adoption, either as a parent or even maybe as a birth parent. What do you want them to know before they even pick up the phone to call you? Chris?
I think I don't want them to know anything. I want them to have lots of questions. I want them to think, I want to find out more. I think especially if you look at like an expectant parent and finding out that you're pregnant and you're not feeling like you're ready, I think you've got a jumbled mess going on. You got lots of feelings and lots of emotions and lots of thoughts. And I don't want anyone to think that they have to have those kind of in line and know what they're thinking and what they're feeling and what they want. And the same with adoptive parents, right? You can just call to explore, right? Let's look into this as an option and see how it fits. And so I would just want someone to just call and ask all the questions.
Maria, same
with
you?
Yeah, I would agree. I think a big thing that I want all parents and prospective adoptive parents to know is that there is so much support out there, from the initial phone call with the lots of questions all the way until the child's 70 years old. You know, there's support all along the way. And I think it's important for families to know too, that initial phone call is not a commitment. You call and ask the questions, and if after that conversation, this isn't the right program for you and the right fit, that's okay. Even if you attend our inquiry meeting and learn more, you can still not continue with the program at that time. There's really no commitment in those beginning stages. And so it's important to make the phone calls and ask the hard questions. That's what we're here for.
For the broader community, for me, who wants to support adoption in a healthy and compassionate way, what do you want me to know?
I think for me, I just think that we need to make adoption an option, right? I think that we need to talk about it. I think we need to suggest it. I think we need to, you know, offer support and connection and to make it something that we talk about. You know, if somebody is expecting and is struggling, I want it to say, hey, you know what, there's folks out there that are ready to walk this journey with you with no expectations, but just here every step of the way, either to get you ready to parent or to make an adoption plan. And I think for me, it's just making that an option and making that a topic of conversation.
Yeah, I would
Same
agree.
Maria.
Making sure that it's comfortable for people to talk about and making it an open conversation. And obviously just spreading that awareness. You can talk to anybody about our program. If somebody mentions they're interested in adoption, it's important that they know all the options that are out there for them. And so just spreading awareness, whether that's through social media, through verbal conversation, through events, anything like that. I think the more that we can spread the message of what we do, who our program serves, and the need that's out there, I think the better.
As we wind up our conversation, are there moments that each of you have had that still surprise you, that move you, even after years of experience? Chris?
Every day. We kind of joke in our program that you can't make this stuff up, and we see those moments all the time when you're just kind of taken back, right? That perfect match that I just wrote a blog article, and it was about that moment when you're meeting with an expectant parent and they are so stressed and they're coming to you and they have all of those emotions, and they take that big breath for the first time in a long time and they say, like, wow, I don't have to do this alone. Like, somebody is here with me and they're, you know, it's going to be okay. And to really watch someone be empowered to can take back their life and to say, I got this. And that's just something that it's amazing to see.
Maria?
I would say the families that we serve, it is amazing to see how much love these families have in their hearts. And to see them slowly be able, like, these adoptive parents think that they're just regular old people. That's all they see. That, you know, they're living their life and they're parenting these children and they're doing the work. But what we see are people that are truly opening their heart, risking so much love, so much energy, so much of themselves for this child, to give this child something that they may not have gotten otherwise. And while doing that, they might be slowly chiseling away at the walls that this child has built throughout their life so far. And they're giving them a sense of belonging. Not a lot of people can say that, you know? And so to these people, they're doing the work, they're going to work, they're parenting. And to us, they're, you know, giving a child belonging and love and safety.
Where can listeners go to learn more and start a conversation? And I qualify that by saying, I think the holidays are a great time to have conversations like this. Where can people learn more?
So you can go to our website, CatholicCharitiesND.org, or you can give us a call, 701-235-4457, or find us on Facebook at Pregnancy, Parenting, and Adoption Services at Catholic Charities ND. But Maria, I bet you have some contact information.
Well, the website's a perfect place to go to because there is access to all of the both adoption agencies and the post-adopt network through the Catholic Charities ND.org website. The phone number can remain the same as well. For social media, we do have our own Facebook page, Ask Adults Adopting Special Kids, and the North Dakota Post-Adopt Network also has their own Facebook page and Instagram page as well.
Chris Haycraft, she's the Director of Pregnancy, Parenting, and Adoption Services for Catholic Charities North Dakota. And Maria Huizengay, she's the lead Ask Adoption Specialist for Catholic Charities North Dakota. To both of you, thank you so much for joining us today on Main Street.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Support for Pray Public is provided by Nodak Insurance Company, serving North Dakota for over 75 years, providing insurance products from auto, home, farm, and business. Details at nodakins.com.
If you're listening to the 3 p.m. broadcast of Main Street, catch up on the news and stories from around the world, the nation, and here at home on All Things Considered. That's up next on Prairie Public. And if you're listening to us during the evening broadcast, keep it here for Hidden Brain. That follows Main Street on Prairie Public.
This is Dakota Datebook for December 22nd. On this date in 1934, the Minot Daily News reported on the appropriation request from the North Dakota School for the Deaf. The school was asking the legislature for funds to complete a building that had been left unfinished for 26 years. Superintendent Burton W. Dregs requested $75,000 to finally complete the long-standing project. Dregs explained that space, originally intended for a swimming pool, was being used as a gymnasium, and the auditorium was dark and unsafe for large assemblies. 8 years earlier, it had been discovered that the building's walls had spread 18 inches. Rods were installed in an attempt to pull the walls back into position. Because of this, Drake said both students and faculty were dealing with negative impacts to teaching and learning. The assembly room, where most lectures were held, was dark, poorly ventilated, and caused considerable eye strain for pupils. During the 1935 legislative session, $7,345 was appropriated for improvements and repairs. That money, combined with Federal Emergency Relief Administration funds, allowed the most pressing repairs to begin. In his 1936 annual report, Driggs noted significant improvements to the buildings and grounds. Roof projects were completed, loose shingles repaired and repainted, and aging sewer and irrigation systems were finally addressed. But the funding wasn't enough to repair the gym building. Students would have to wait several more years before new funds were appropriated, and even longer before construction could be finished. Money was finally approved in 1947 and 49, but strikes and price inflation delayed the project until 1952. During this time, School for the Deaf students played basketball at neighboring schools to make up for the lack of a usable gym. At last, in 1953, the new gymnasium at the School for the Deaf was completed, finishing the project Burton W. Driggs had begun nearly two decades earlier. The long-awaited facility finally provided students with the safe, functional space they needed for both education and recreation. Today's Dakota Datebook is written by Ashley Thronson. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
Arts programming on Prairie Public is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, a state agency developing, promoting, and supporting the arts in North Dakota.
You might hear some people you agree with on Morning Edition and some you don't. That's the point. Different views for a full picture of the news. Listen weekdays from NPR News.
Morning Edition, weekdays from 4 to 9 a.m. Central on Prairie Public. Support for Prairie Public is provided by the Bush Foundation, in partnership with the Good Relatives, announcing the 2025 Bush Prize Native Nations honorees, Minneapolis American Indian Center, Mokoche Agriculture Development, and Turtle Mountain Impact. Learn more at goodrelativescollaborative.org.
And that wraps up this Monday edition of Main Street. Thank you so much for joining us today. Remember, you can hear this and all past episodes of Main Street at our website at prairiepublic.org, or better yet, subscribe to it as a podcast. Tomorrow on the show, we'll re-air one of our favorite conversations from 2025 with a robot. That's right, we interview ChatGPT. That's tomorrow on Main Street, and we look forward to your joining us again.